Now I'll get to the main message. So as you guys know, sometimes I like you to do some little exercises while I'm up here. So that's going to happen today. If you do have a pen or a pencil or a little sheet of paper, you're ready to go. But don't worry if you don't. You can do it in your brain too. So I've got a couple things prepared for you here with my message. So let me get started with the message by turning over to Matthew chapter 28 and verses 19 and 20. So you'll get an idea of what I'm going to be talking about today. Matthew 28, 19 and 20. Familiar scripture to many of us. So Matthew 28, 19. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I commanded you, and lo, I am with you alway, even unto the end of the world. So I'm going to seize upon, you want to teach these people to observe whatever I commanded you. So I'm going to give you some ideas today that can help you teach people concepts, ideas. Of course, I'm thinking about the gospel, okay? I want you to teach people the gospel message. But what I'm going to address today will help you teach people whatever you want to teach people. So if we've got any teachers out there, you probably are aware of some of these things already. But I'm just going to reinforce some ideas, some concepts on how to make your ideas, hopefully the gospel idea, stick with other people. Now, we know that it's not always going to work. Whenever we're talking about our beliefs to other people, it's not necessarily going to work. God draws people to Him. He does that. We read about that in John chapter 6. But hey, let's try everything we can to get this message to other people. And I'm going to give you some ideas today that can help you do that. Some of the material I'm going to discuss today comes from a book titled Made to Stick. Made to Stick, okay? It's by two brothers, Chip and Dan Heath. So again, I'm going to give some credit to those guys. They came up with a very interesting book. They also have written a book called Switch that deals with change and how to deal with change, why change happens, etc., etc. So Chip and Dan Heath, if you want to get a lot more detail on my subject matter today. Now, one thing you got to keep in mind as I begin this discussion is who created our brains, all right? I've said this before, we know God created the brain, all right? So what these guys are finding out as they do this research and these studies on what makes ideas stick with people is the brain likes things a certain way. If you can bring the message in a certain way, it's very encouraging to the brain if it gets these ways. And I'll discuss what these six major ways are. So again, remember who's created the brain. If you doubt me about what I'm talking about today, remember God has created the brain. So what these social scientists are learning comes from the study of the brain, which God created. And as I go through some scriptures, you'll see, oh yeah, that is there in the Bible. Oh yeah, that one's in the Bible too. And you're probably going to think of a lot more that relate to these six major concepts. Now here's the six concepts, and then I'll go through them a little more detail. Then we'll talk about them at the end. Keep your message simple, and I'll explain what I mean by simple. Keep your message unexpected, or let it have some unique quality to it. That's number two. Keep it concrete. Now, you might have an idea what I mean by concrete, but again, you could probably think of a number of things when I say make it concrete. That's three. Make it credible. That's four. Use emotion. That's five. And finally, number six, Use storytelling whenever you can with your message. Okay? Now, you can't always do that, but again, those are the six major points that I'm going to look at today. Now, before I get to these six points, I also need to give you another point, okay? Why is it some people don't get messages, all right? And the reason is, there's a lot of reasons, but one reason is what we call the curse of knowledge. I forgot one of my tools here, so I'm going to need this. One reason is the curse of knowledge. I'm going to explain what the curse of knowledge is to you through a little demonstration. But let me just try to explain it to you through words first. So let's pretend you don't, those of you that came into the church from another church, how many are there out there who learned about this information from another church? Okay, so I'll give you my experience. There was a time in my life when I heard from a Jehovah Witness about the origin of Christmas. I was in high school at the time. I remember sitting in my chair. My friend over here was talking to me. He was a Jehovah Witness. He was telling me what the truth of Christmas was, and I was there like, what? You know, that was the first time I heard it, and I didn't get it. Okay, he was giving me scriptures and history, and it just was not computing in my brain. For him, it was all clear, concise, and he got it. But for me, it was totally like he was speaking a foreign language. Until later, I heard about this truth again in another way, and I heard about it. And then all of a sudden, I think God began to work with me, and then it clicked for me. Okay? Once it clicked, going back to the time where I didn't have that knowledge was now impossible for me. So I can't really grasp when I didn't have the knowledge once I now have the knowledge. You get what I'm saying here? It's hard to put your brain back where it was when you didn't understand something that now you do understand. And just muse over that a little bit the rest of the day. But I want to explain this through a demonstration, what's called the curse of knowledge. That those who have knowledge, it's sometimes very difficult for them to get that knowledge across to others, because once you know it, you can never really understand how it is not to know it anymore. Okay? So here's a little demonstration we're going to do to try to bring this point home. I'm going to play some songs up here by tapping them out. And they're songs that all of you have heard before. This research has been conducted many times, and what they find is people who sit and go through all these songs that are tapped out usually only get about 3 out of 100 songs correct. And I'm talking popular songs. Now let's try it out one time. Now this is a popular song. See if you know what I'm tapping out. Okay, ready? Wow, you got it right. Was anybody else there? Okay, not that quick. Now here's the deal. There's always a ringer in the audience. No, but that's okay, Margie. You have not messed up my demonstration. Okay. Here's the point I want to make. Let me try another one, okay? And then I'll get to my point. But that's very good. Here's another one. No, but try again. Anybody? It's a song you've heard before. Okay, happy birthday to you. Now here's the deal. In my head, I'm hearing that song because I'm hitting the pen, right? You're in your head. I can't get inside your head, all right? So you're hearing whatever's in your head from your experience, your past, your knowledge, whatever's there. You get what I'm saying here about the difficulty of imparting knowledge to people who don't have the knowledge that you have. Now, you guys have all heard these songs before, but when we tap, tapping sounds very similar, okay? Regardless of what song I'm tapping, there's no guitar, there's no drums, there's no piano in there. So that's what makes this a lot more difficult when you start tapping these songs out. But think of this demonstration as the curse of knowledge. That I've got the song in my head playing, and I'm in control of what I'm doing with this pen. That's how it is when you're trying to impart new knowledge to somebody else. Some will get it, okay? 3 out of 100. Just like the gospel message. Maybe 3 out of 100 or less, when you think of the billions of people in this world, really get it. Because of the curse of knowledge. The curse of knowledge includes the fact that God is doing His thing, His way, and we don't have all the information on why He's doing it that way. And let me give you more information on that. In Matthew 13, and you guys are all familiar with the scripture, I'm not going to get into a sermon about this, but I just want to remind you of this. Matthew 13 and verse 13. Matthew 13 and verse 13. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing, see not, and hearing, they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing you shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing you shall see and shall not perceive. So again, God tells us in His Word that people are not necessarily going to get this information. That's true of the gospel message. It's true of any message you're bringing to somebody, more so the gospel message. But part of it has to do with this idea of a curse of knowledge, that it's very difficult to impart something that someone has no idea about that you know backwards and forwards. Okay? So just keep that in mind now as we begin to discuss these 6 major points that can help us try to overcome that curse of knowledge. Point number one, keep it simple. Okay, that's a real basic admonition. Keep your message simple. Now, I'm going to give you a familiar phrase that you've probably heard before. And recently I've tried this, and some younger folks have not heard this before, so let me see how we do with the younger folks here. A bird in the hand is worth 2 in the bush. So anybody under 30, have you heard that before? Those of you that are under 30. A bird, okay, you haven't? You have not heard a bird in the hand is worth 2 in the bush. Okay, and that's okay. That's okay. Because I'm seeing that our culture is changing, okay? But let me ask you to think about this, those of you that are under 30. A bird in the hand is worth 2 in the bush. Do you have an idea what that means? A bird in your hand is worth 2 in the bush. Okay, so here's what it means. So if I caught a bird, okay, I got it with me. It's mine, all right? And there's 2 out there running around in the bushes somewhere, which can fly away. It's much more difficult for me to go get those 2 birds out there than me rather holding on to the 1 bird that I have. Okay, so that's the concept. That's what it's saying. And this can relate to a lot of things in life. Like when you got something good going on, don't go seeking after something else, okay? Because you're okay right now. Okay, so that's the concept. Now, that concept has been in world culture for over 2,000 years in different ways. It is said in different ways. It's not just said, a bird in the hand is worth 2 in the bush. In Turkey, they might say it in a different way than we say it here. In China, they might say it in a different way than we say it here. But it dates back to 570 BC, and it was within one of Aesop's fables. Now, what I'm saying when I say keep it simple is what that particular saying says. It says something very basic, very easy to understand, and it's stood the test of time. It's been in world culture for over 2,500 years because it is simple. And this is what I mean by simple. It's compact, and it has core information. Okay? So it's compact. The sentences are short, and core means it's drawn from long experience. So living life for a while, you will realize that it's better to go with that bird in the hand than running after those two in the bush. Count on what you can count on. Don't go after something new if you already got what you need. Now, that's what I mean by keeping your message simple. I want you to think about the Bible for a minute. I want you to think about the stories in the Bible, the concepts in the Bible. What happens when you die? The resurrection. Jesus' sacrifice. What baptism means. Are these complex concepts when you begin to think about them? Is baptism hard to understand? You die to your old life, you start living a new life. Is it hard to understand Genesis 1, verse 1? In the beginning, God created. Okay, and God said, let there. And God said, let there. Are those basic, simple concepts? I believe they are. I believe they are when you begin to look at it. When you go to Exodus chapter 20 and you begin to read the Ten Commandments, are the Ten Commandments mechanical engineering? Are the Ten Commandments chemistry? And I like to say that because I got a D in chemistry in high school, okay? No! The Ten Commandments are not chemistry. They are not mechanical engineering. They are core concepts that you become very aware of when you start living life. Okay? Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. Don't kill somebody. Okay? Because here's what happens when you do that kind of stuff. Your life gets messed up. Those are core, simple concepts within the core of what the Bible is telling us. Love God, love your neighbor. Okay? So God's message is very simple, and we need to keep it simple for those especially who are brand new to it. Now let me give you another example about simplicity in bringing a message. Those of you who have paper and pen, I want you to write out this series of letters I'm going to give you. So I'm going to stop at certain times as I give you the letters, and then you just stop and, you know, put a space and write some more letters, okay? So I'm going to give you a series of letters, okay? So here we go. J, stop. F, K, F, B, stop. I, N, A, T, stop. O, U, P, stop. S-N-A, stop. S-A-I, stop. R-S, stop. Cover up your letters. Don't look at them right now. Don't look at your letters right now. Who can give me the first four or five letters in order without looking at them? Or those of you who are maybe thinking about it, can you remember those first four or five letters? Okay. Margie, can you? Okay, I'm just messing with you. No. Okay, let me check. I got to check. Yeah, J was the first letter. I even got to look at it. Yeah, you're right. Margie gets the gold star today, okay? So you're right, J was the first letter. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play this game again. Okay, you guys failed miserably at that, okay? But we're going to try this game again. Listen again. I'm going to do it very similar to what we just did. You guys ready? Same deal. Get ready to write. JFK, stop. FBI, stop. NATO, stop. UPS, stop. NASA, stop. IRS, stop. Stop looking at the letters. Don't look at your letters right now. Who can give me the first four or five or six letters that you just did, wrote down? Anybody? What was it? JFK, that's right. Anybody after that? FBI you got? Anybody got anything else? NATO was there? IRS was there? NASA, very good. You guys are doing really good. What happened? Look at your letters, folks. Look at both lists of letters. They're the same, aren't they? Look at the letters above and below. Those are the same letters, right? What happened? Why were you able to remember all the letters in the second row as opposed to the first row? Because I simplified it for you. I simplified it by putting letters together. JFK. Oh, everybody's heard that. So what I was doing was I was going on your core knowledge that most of you have heard of JFK. Most of you have heard of the FBI. So I packaged my message for your brain. You get what I'm saying? I know you have core concepts up there. So I worked with what I knew you knew. People in the world who are Sunday-keeping Christians have core concepts about Christianity. They believe in Jesus Christ. Okay? They believe in salvation. They believe in resurrection. They might have different ideas about it, but they believe in a resurrection. Use what they know to help them get to where you are with your knowledge. This is one example of how you can do that. Again, lots of ways to think about that, but I just want you to understand what I mean by a simple message. Use what they've got, keep it core, and keep it compact. That will help you when we talk about being simple. And in that book, they just get into so many other examples of simplicity. But I don't have enough time to get all that. So I'm going on to point number two, which is this. Did you guys hear what I said? Did you hear I said make it unexpected, keep it unique? You guys hear that? Listen. You hear that outside? You hear that outside? Does anybody hear anything outside? Good, because I'm not hearing anything outside either. But you know what? Now you're going to remember, what's Mike talking about when he said, something to hear outside. I couldn't hear anything outside. I made it unexpected. You weren't expecting me. When I said, do you hear that? Some of you in your brain might have said, what? Is it the fan? Is it the air conditioning? And when I said outside, you were like, Mike's hearing things. He's crazy. What's he doing up here? Get rid of this guy. Okay? So I made it unexpected to explain what I mean by unexpected and unique. That you want to make your message unexpected and unique. And when you think about the Bible, there definitely is some unexpected occurrences, some unique things about the truth of God that can really draw people in. The brain is designed to be keenly aware of changes. So if somebody's talking to you in a monotone voice for about 30 minutes, and then all of a sudden they raise their voice or slam the podium, your brain wakes up, okay? Your brain goes, yeah, something different. I want to grasp onto that, okay? So keep that in mind with whatever message you're delivering. Let's go to Acts chapter 2 and see this playing out in the real world. Acts chapter 2, God knows the brain, folks, and He needed to get that church started a couple thousand years ago. So what does He do? For all our brethren in the Sunday churches who speak, okay, who say that, okay, which is not tongues, okay, porona miliso ilinike lexis. So I'm talking in Greek now, which one person in the audience understands. Okay? That was okay, right? Okay. So So, but for others of you, that was really, what the heck's going on here? But here's the deal. Let's go back to 2,000 years ago, and Peter gets up and starts talking on the day of Pentecost, and he's talking in foreign language. And some in the audience are getting it, like George. And George is saying, yeah, Mike can still speak a little Greek, but he needs some more lessons, okay? But that's what happened. It shocked these people. These people were shocked and amazed that they were hearing the gospel message in their own languages. The Jews had come back to Jerusalem for the festival of Pentecost, which was their custom, and they were living in all parts of the Roman kingdom. And they came back to Jerusalem for the feast. And they hear this guy preaching in their own language, and it's like unexpected. They didn't expect this Galilean fisherman to know these languages, or these others who began to speak in tongues to know these languages. It was unexpected. It was unique. It was different. And therefore, the people listened, and they were impressed. And it made it interesting to them, and they wanted to hear more. And it stuck with some people. The message stuck because God allowed this miracle to happen. And when you read through the Bible, you see miracle events occurring at specific important times in history. Miracles don't occur willy-nilly throughout the Bible. When you go back to the Exodus, a lot of big miracles are happening then. When you come to the birth of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus, once again, a period of a lot of miracles. And you have some miracles sprinkled throughout other times, but nothing on a consistent, regular basis. Miracles are unique and special, and God determines when He's going to affect nature and do a miracle. But the point I want to make here is when you think of the gospel message, it is unique. It is unexpected. Most of the Christian world believes they're going to heaven when they die. We don't believe that. The Bible doesn't say that. Believe it or not, that's not in the Bible. John 3:13, no one has ascended up to heaven except He who came down from heaven, the Son of Man. That's Jesus Christ. He's coming to bring salvation, to bring the spiritual body to you. You will rise and meet Him in the air. We will reign and rule on the earth. Revelation 5:10, they will be kings and priests and reign on the earth. This idea of heaven and going to heaven comes from the mixture of pagan religion with Hellenistic thought. It permeated the Christian world a couple thousand years ago. And many Christian churches today are espousing beliefs that are not in the Bible. They're just not there. They come from this syncretic connection and beliefs from various religions latching on to Christianity. So if you want the gospel message to stick, use why we keep the Sabbath instead of Sunday. Use why the wicked will eventually die a fiery death, but they will not burn forever. Use why we're not going to heaven when we die, because we rise from our graves, meet Him in the air, and He reigns and rules upon this earth. Use Christ was not born on Christmas Day. That's a historical fact. You can prove that from history. Okay? First time I heard it, it got my attention. Some people will be upset with you. But how are you saying it? Okay? That's important too. How do you get into those conversations? Do you barge in at the Christmas party in your office and say, "You guys are a bunch of pagans. You should not be doing this." Do you do that? Or do you actually eat lunch at the Christmas party and say, "Mike, what are you getting your kid for Christmas?" "Oh, I'm not getting my kid anything for..." "What? What do you mean?" That's unique to them, okay? They perk up when I say that, okay? "Well, I don't believe that, you know, we should celebrate Christmas because da-da-da-da-da-da." And the next year, they ask me again because they've forgotten what I told them the year before. So that message didn't stick. I didn't say this was perfect, that this is going to work all the time, okay? But you keep on trying. You keep on trying. That's what it's all about. Are you going to give up? Are you going to quit? are you going to keep on trying? That's part of what this physical life is all about. Point number three, concreteness. Make your message concrete. Now, when you think of concrete, I think of getting stuck in concrete, that I can't get out of it. I can't move because it's concrete. So here's what we want to address, what we mean by concreteness. So let me give you an example first from a scripture. I'm going to turn to Micah chapter 4 and verse 2. Micah chapter 4 and verse 2 to begin to explain what I mean by concreteness here for your message. Okay, Micah 4:2. Just notice in verse 1 it says, but in the last days. So you know what the time frame is, what the context is here. And I'm going to pick it up at verse 2, Micah 4. And many nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord and to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. So did you guys, I remember this spring, we got a bunch of geese living near my house. So I saw all the young geese when they were born. You know, they look really ugly, you know, those young geese. But they start following their parents around. As they're crossing the street, you see the big geese out in front, and then the little ones are right behind them, you know, following their parents across the street. Read what it says here again. We will walk in his paths. He will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. That's addressing what I like to call experiential learning. That you actually do the learning. Whatever you're learning, you get the concept. It's up on the blackboard. You know, this is this, and this is how you do it, and they write it up on the blackboard for you. Okay? That's one level of learning. Another level of learning is then take what's on the blackboard and then begin to discuss it and talk about it and apply it in your brain. Okay, that's another level. A third level, a higher level, is when you actually go out and you begin to do what you've been talking and reading and learning about. That is a bigger time level because it clicks for the brain once again. All these levels can help the brain. But the most important one is when you're actually doing it. When you're actually following the law and you realize, oh, I should not punch that person in the face. I should walk away from this. Because when I did punch him 5 years ago, I went to jail for 30 days or whatever it was. When you begin to experience it, and the experiences of life teach us all kinds of things. Even the bad experiences of life. In fact, the bad experiences are good. What did I say? Wow, that was a big statement. The bad experiences of life are when the learning is really brought home. Why? Because the emotions are involved. And that's one of my other points I'm going to get to later. When you bring the emotions in, the learning is so much greatly enhanced. And that's just a fact of life. Why does God have it that way? I don't know. I'm not God. But I know that's the way He has it. And it works, folks. It works. Now, getting back to concreteness. What I mean by concreteness is you've experienced it. You've experienced it. If you can bring your personal experience into the message you're giving somebody about the gospel, well, let me tell you why I believe in God. Because I used to be an alcoholic. And once I started living this way of life, I got off the juice. I no longer drink. And my life is so much better because of it. That is a powerful statement to someone who is still on the juice right now. When someone can tell them that, that is big time. That's why so many alcoholics get together in those groups and have those meetings. Doesn't work for everybody, but it works for some. Now let's try a little exercise dealing with what I mean by concreteness. So those of you that are good students and have your... No, I'm just kidding. those of you that have your notebooks available, I'm going to ask you to jot some things down again. Those who don't, you can still play my game. I'm trying to do this for everybody. You can still play my game. Just do it in your head. Okay, here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you about 15 seconds to write down as many things that are white in color in the world. Go. Stop. Who's got more than three? Okay. How many do you have, Margie?
Four.
How many do you have?
Four.
Anybody got more than four? That's okay. But I got to tell you, my highest number has been six. I've done this a few times. Okay, so you got four and you got four. Okay, we'll go with your sister this time, okay? What do you got? Give me the four things.
Snow.
No. Milk.
Eggs.
Sheets, white sheets, sure. Okay, so you came up with four. Okay, we're going to play this game again. You guys ready? Those of you that have pen and paper in hand, those of you in your brain, here's the game this time. 15 seconds once again. Write down as many white things in your refrigerator as you can think of. Go. Stop. Barb, how many you got? Who's got more than five? You got one? Give me one. Milk, you're right. You get a gold star today. If I had one, I'd give it to you, but I don't. Sorry. Okay. I got to come back with one next time. Okay, so you got five. You mentioned some. What's new in your list from what you mentioned before? Okay, cheese, bread, and ice cream. Okay, here's the deal. Whenever you do this test, usually the numbers are very close. But what was the question? Think of something that's white in the world versus think of something that's white in your refrigerator. So doesn't the world have more white objects in it than your refrigerator? Yeah, it does. Why could you not come up with a lot more of those white objects in the world? Exactly. Barb is hitting it. I got to give stars out today, but I don't have them. So anyway, you're correct. That is the answer, that when you begin, the brain begins to try to deal with the world, it kind of does not compute for the brain. Because that's a broad subject. When I say your refrigerator, you open and close your refrigerator every day. Do you understand what I mean by concreteness now? It's something that you're experiencing on a regular basis. Okay? That's what I mean by making your message concrete. So you need to know the people that you're talking to. You need to know what they're experiencing on a regular basis in order to make your message more concrete for them. Because it's not about you, folks. It's not about how well you understand this and how well you know it and how many books you've read on it. Can you get the message across to somebody who's going through something? Do you know what they're going through? Unless you're talking to them, you don't. You get what I'm saying here? It goes back to relationship. That when you have a strong relationship with other people, it makes all six of these points so much easier to follow through on. Point number four, make it credible. Make it credible. So this one's pretty easy. If I was talking about economics, and again, we'll throw the politics out of this, okay? But if I was talking about economics, you guys think Alan Greenspan might be a good source to talk to about economics, okay? Let's just say that he is, okay? Okay. You guys might agree that Stephen Hawking would be a good guy to talk to about physics. Okay, if we wanted to learn about physics, let's go to Stephen Hawking. What about Oprah Winfrey? Is she credible for some people, though? Because she's a billionaire. Because to a lot of people, she is credible. Some people are allured by celebrity. For some people, celebrity is credibility. Believe it or not, I'm not saying all people. So yes, the people who know their subject really good are credible. Some celebrities are really credible to some people. Say that again.
Marketing.
Barkley.
Marketing.
Marketing, exactly. Exactly, yes. I thought for a second, I thought you said Barkley, Charles Barkley. I was like, wait a minute. Okay, he is credible to some people, though. Some people quote Charles Barkley, yeah. But Michael Jordan. For some people, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, like, that's the guy, okay? What's LeBron doing? Okay, what kind of shoe is he selling? What kind of thing is he into? He's into movies and TV shows now. And people in Hollywood glam on to his celebrity to get some TV shows made or whatever it may be. Now, let me throw another name at you. Pam Laffin. Anybody heard of Pam Laffin? Nobody's heard of that name before. Let me tell you this. She was as credible as any of those people I just mentioned. And here's how she developed her credibility. Pam Laffin started smoking cigarettes at age 10. When she was 24, she developed emphysema. When she was in her late 20s, she had a lung transplant. When she was about 30, she was going to have another lung transplant, but she died at age 31. But she made some commercials about the dangers of smoking, and you might remember them a number of years ago. This woman got on, she was speaking through one of those things in her neck because she couldn't speak due to what the cigarettes had done to her. She was as credible a witness for the anti-smoking campaign as any other commercial that they've put on TV. Why? Why was she credible? Her experience. Her experience made her credible. So you can develop, and I'll tell you a story about credibility. Before I became a quote-unquote elder, okay? Nice, I'm not trying to make fun of that, okay? But I'm just a human being, okay? Before I became an elder, I was at work one day. This is back around 2000. And I was talking, we were getting talking about things at work, about religion and things. There was a woman in the office who was Catholic. And I forget what the subject was, but it was one of those issues that I told you are unique, what the Bible says and what people believe. So we were talking about one of these issues, and I was giving all my facts and figures and everything. And this woman says to me, "Oh, what degree do you have in theology?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I don't have a degree in theology." Okay, I was on. Yeah, I don't have a degree in theology. "Oh, well, my priest does have a degree in theology, and he says something different." Okay, so, you know, for her, credibility was all about having this degree in theology. So, yeah, you're not going to matter with everybody, but here's the point. Here's the point. The more credible you can be, the better it is. The more credibility you have, the better it is. And credibility manifests itself in many ways. If you're living a honest, good Christian life, and people are observing that, and they see that you're different when you come to work, and you're happy, and you're smiling, and you're not getting down, and they go, "That guy's weird, or he's different, you know, something's up with him." Okay? So at least they know there's something different about you. Okay? And that may matter to some people. It may matter to some people. So credibility matters. Now, when we think about the message of the Bible, John 1:1 makes Jesus Christ very credible for me because it says, "In the beginning was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So I'm going to pay attention to this being that says he was God. Whatever message he has. And there's internal evidence within the Bible that helps me understand that, yeah, he was God, at least for my mind. So that is definitely credibility, folks, when you think about it. And when you think about the Bible, there are many ways you can prove that it's credible. And we've been through some of those sermons before. For lack of time, I can't get into those types of details. But you know the Bible has internal credibility. And if you know that, if you know that the book of Daniel was written in the 500s B.C., instead of the 100s B.C., and you start talking about somebody on that particular point, that might make a difference to some people out there who are into that type of thing. Once you can prove that to them, that's going to make a difference. Moving on from credibility, let's go to our final two points. The first one I want to deal with is emotion. All right, emotion. And this is a quote from Mother Teresa. If I look at the Mass, speaking of the mass of people, not the Catholic Mass, if I look at the Mass, I will never act. If I look at the One, I will. Now, here's what this means. If I look at the Mass, I won't act. If I look at the One, I will. This study was conducted at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and a number of similar studies have been conducted that prove the same results of this study I'm going to explain to you right now. Here's what they were trying to do with this study. They wanted to see what would motivate people to give money to charity, okay? And they thought about, well, if we tell them about famine in Africa in general, and we talk about stats and facts and figures, will that have more of an impact? Or will talking about a little girl who's starving and giving you her name, will that get people to give us more money for charity? So they set up the experiment like this. You come in and you're going to get paid to answer some questions, and then we're going to give you some money at the end of it if you answer all these questions. So the people came in, they answered the questions, they got an envelope with money in it. Inside the envelope was a piece of paper. For some people it said all these facts and figures about starvation in Africa and this and that and the other thing. So not very personal. The other ones got a bit of information about this little girl, her name, what village she was in, all these facts and things about this little girl and a picture of her. Okay? So obviously you probably know what people gave more money for. They gave more money when they got the picture of the little girl and got information about the little girl. And they've replicated this experiment numerous times in lots of different ways. And always it's the same thing. When you hit people's emotion, you make more of an impact in getting them to connect. You make more of an impact in getting them to connect. Now, we talked about earlier about how emotion, when you go through something, your emotions are hit upon, they are impacted, and whatever you go through has more of an effect on you because of that. The same thing's true when you've got a message that you're trying to bring. Now, I don't know if you watched the Republican and the Democratic debate, or not debate, the conventions, okay? But you could see that various speakers were trying to hit people through emotional means. Some of them were very blatant with it, and others were, you know, using it in a very a good way to try to hit you with emotion in various ways. Many speech writers will try to do that. They want to hit those harp strings. They want to impact you. And they know, like you said with marketing, they know emotions are one of the major ways you want to market products to people. Now, can we relate this to the Bible in some way? Emotions and God. Well, God has given us emotions, I believe, for a reason. To make those lessons that we learn more impactful for us. But think about it this way. Death is facing us all, right? There's no way any of us can get away from death. And that's an emotional thing when you think about it, isn't it? When you lose a loved one, especially a young loved one, that hurts like nothing else. That's a hard hit to take. Even when you lose an old loved one. As my parents get up into their 80s now, you know, things are changing with them. And it's like they aren't what I thought my parents were anymore. They're still my parents, but it's different now. And that's hitting me. It's hitting me right now, okay? It's hitting me right now. God uses that. He's given us that for a reason. He makes death part of the plan for a reason. You cannot escape it, you know? I'm going to die. Why am I alive? What's life all about? That happened to me when I was 13. One day it just hit me. Man, what's life all about? You know, I was 13. I was reading the paper. It was all crazy. I was like, what's going on out there? And I said, man, I'm going to die too. What, you know? And I was like, I got to figure this thing out called life. And that got me into this, okay? That happens to everybody at some point, unless they're a psycho or something, okay? Or a sociopath, all right? At some point in life, you just kind of say, gee, what's this all about? And God has done that for a reason. He has death within life for a reason. Because you're going to have to face it. You're going to have to deal with it. And that's going to lead many people to start thinking about religion. But I think about Revelation 20, verse 5, where it talks about this other resurrection after the 1,000 years, when all the rest of the dead are resurrected. Is that not going to be an emotional experience for the rest of the dead? For the people who are spiritual beings, when they see people who are long dead that they knew in life raised, is that going to be an awesome experience? I'm looking forward to that day. That's my star day, my gold star day on the calendar that goes into eternity, okay? I'm waiting for that day, all right? Whenever I think of that, I perk up. I get excited, you know, even if I got into a car crash and I was 2 hours late getting home, I just think about that and I'm back. I'm all right with life, you know. Yeah, God definitely uses emotion, folks, and every human being has emotions. Ted Bundy's, you're going to have some trouble with those types, but that is a very small part of the population. Most people, you can impact their emotions if you understand what's important to them, what makes them hurt, what makes them tick, what the Bible says, if their parents are getting older, you know, whatever it may be, there are ways you can make this message stick. The last point I want to make is storytelling. Use stories with your messages. Don't have to use them all the time, but use stories with your messages. Let me prove this point to you. I'm not going to go to all these because I don't have time, but I'm just going to mention some scriptures in Luke, and I'm only barely scratching the surface. Luke 10, verse 25. Luke 12, verse 13. Luke 13, verse 18. Luke 14, verse 15. Luke 15, verse 3. Luke 16, verse 1. Luke 18, verse 2. And let me just show you what I was getting at with Luke 18, verse 2. Luke 18, verse 2 says this. It says, "And he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint, saying, there was in a city a judge which feared not God, neither regarded man." And I'm just scratching the surface of every instance in the New Testament where Jesus uses a parable to explain a finer point. Over and over and over, parable after parable after parable, he uses. He explains something, he says something, he gives them a concept, and then he says, and then he tells them a story about the concept. Why? Why is he doing that? He knows this. He knows this brain. Your left side of the brain and your right side of the brain do different things. Now, both of them interact. Both of them connect with each other. And the left brain, right brain concepts of 20 years ago are being altered by neuroscientists today. But this is still true. Your left brain is more focused on facts, figures, linear thinking. Your right brain is more focused on color, imagination, all those artistic type things. And what a story does is this. It doesn't just give you facts and figures. There might be facts and figures in the story, but it also puts them into some type of a context of color, imagination, emotion, which impacts that right side of the brain. So then the neural pathways of the brain are connecting like this when you hear a story, rather than like this when you're just hearing a lecture about facts and figures. Numerous research studies have been conducted on the power of storytelling to impact people with some type of a message. And here's the bigger thing about storytelling. It's a vast subject. And I got a sermon on it, but I'm not doing that today. But anyway, one point I want to make about it is this. The reason it is so powerful is the brain is actually creating a simulation when it hears a story. It's as if you are in whatever it is you are hearing about. The brain puts you there in a simulated type of an environment. The reason they know this is they once studied monkeys with these things called mirror neurons in the monkey's brain. A man was picking up a banana, and the monkey was still connected to the brain machine. And when he picked up the banana, all of a sudden the thing went off, and they thought that the monkey was reacting because it was thinking about picking up a banana. But no, the monkey's part of the brain that picks up a banana was actually what was being registered. Not the thinking about picking up a banana, but the actual part of the brain that picks up a banana. And they call these mirror neurons that are in our brain. They're also in human brains. And when we hear a story or when we experience something, actually experiencing it, that has so much more impact in the brain than if you just are talking about facts and figures relating to this story. When you hear that story, the brain actually has you there going through it in your brain. Okay? This is what science tells us. That's what makes stories so powerful. That's why we need to use them when we're trying to deliver a message, when we're trying to preach this gospel. That's why this book is chock full of stories. Because God knows how the brain works. And He knows if you continue to read these stories over and over and over, it becomes a virtual simulation in your head that when you are tempted by whatever it is, you don't do it because this story's running in your head not to do it. You get what I'm saying here? That's how your brain works. The more you get into this, the more it starts to become part of this. And that makes life a lot easier. So the six methods of getting your message to stick, gang, are backwards. Use stories, hit emotion, be credible, be concrete, throw some unexpected thing and unique things in there, and keep it simple.